everyone, and welcome to the Las Musas podcast. My name is Lulu Del Acre, and I am the author of, I would say I'm the creator of more than 43 books, illustrator of all of them, and the author of half of them. But my latest book is Cool Green, Amazing Remarkable Trees, and Verde Fresco, Árboles Asombrosos y Extraordinarios. Today, I'm joined by Musas, Salian Rodriguez, Alisa Reynoso Morris, and Gabriela Aldeman. And on this episode of Ask a Musa, we'll be answering your questions about pitching work and offering advice to pre-published writers. So let's see. Can we start off by introducing ourselves and telling all of our listeners about your latest book? So let's see, shall we start with Sally Ann?
Sure. So hi, everyone. So yes, my name is Sally Ann Rodriguez, and my debut novel is called Treasure Tracks, and it's a middle grade adventure story about 12-year-old Fernando, or Finn as he prefers to be called, who goes on a quest for a sunken treasure, hoping that finding this family legacy will help his ailing abuelo.
That sounds intriguing. Okay, let's see. Let's keep on with introducing ourselves. I would love to hear about Alisa Reynoso Morris. Tell us about you and your book, Alisa.
Yes, thank you so much. I love your middle grade. It sounds super awesome. Anything where there's like adventure and grandparents, I'm all about it. My debut picture book is called Plátanos Are Love, and it's really an intergenerational story in which Esme, the main character, learns about her culture, her history, and does it through the love of plátanos with her abuela. So shout out to grandparents. I love the abuelos in stories.
Yeah, definitely. And plátanos, who doesn't love plátanos, right?
I mean, come on. We can't be friends if you don't love plátanos.
That is right. I love plátanos too. So, and Gabriela, introduce us to your book and yourself.
Yeah, I can go next. You guys are making me hungry. So my name is Gabriela Aldeman. My debut book is coming out in July. It's called Paula's Patches, illustrated by Rocio Arriola and published by Free Spirit Publishing. And it's a story about Paula, who ripped a large hole in her pants at the start of the school day. She's embarrassed, and she tries everything to hide the hole from her classmates, only to find out that they too have leaky lunch boxes, spaghetti stains, hand-me-down backpacks. So she comes up with a solution for herself and her classmates, colorful patches for everyone. And it can be used as a starting point for a discussion of consumerism, fast fashion, and the values of mending and fixing things. So yeah, that's me. Thanks.
That sounds really interesting. You know, I think I forgot to tell you a little bit about my latest book. Did I not forget?
So, yeah.
Okay, so the proudest thing about this book is, see, I believe that each book begins with ideas, so the best ideas are the ones that are really close to your heart. And in doing this, I'm an avid gardener. I mean, I'm an avid cook too, Alisa. So I'm totally with you with plátanos and everything done with plátanos. And, you know, let's not go there because I'll be talking forever. But I would like to tell you about Cool Green, Amazing Remarkable Trees. And I'm an avid gardener as well. And actually, it just started during the 2010, during the pandemic. Because I love nature and I love trees, I went to many national parks. And this is the book where a Latino landscaper shares his knowledge as well as his love of trees, of the amazing trees that cover the earth, with his young nieta. And in pictures and words, it's lyrical. And it's also because one of my favorite parts about creating books is the research process. It's chock full of information in the back matter. But that's it. I'll stop because I'll be forever talking about trees. And we want to continue with the questions that we have from let's see, we do have several questions from the audience. Oh, no. Before we could go to that, hey, can you share with me, what are you reading right now? And who'd like to jump in?
I can start. I just finished reading The Last Beekeeper by Pablo Cartaya, and it was really fascinating. It's a dystopian novel about really a beekeeper, the last bees, this colony and climate change. So it was really fascinating and very relevant, I think, to, it's a middle grade. So I think it's just very relevant to students and kind of the issues that we're dealing with on a global level right now. So definitely recommends.
That is an interesting point that you brought here, because you're reading a middle grade novel and you write middle grade, correct? Or am I mistaken?
No, I write middle grade. So I would say that probably 90% of the books I read are middle grade, because that's the category I write in. So I feel it's kind of research as well, if you will. It's important to read in your age category, because that's how you know what's relevant, what's contemporary, what's going on, what themes are being discussed. I think it helps you certainly develop as a writer as well.
That is an excellent point that we'll probably come back to it as we get into the questions of the audience. Very good point. Thank you. So how about you, Alisa? What are you reading?
I'm actually reading middle grade too, even though I don't write middle grade, because I want to write middle grade. So like on that thread of before you put pen to paper or you start typing on your keyboard, definitely read in the genre that you want to write in. So I'm currently reading Pilar Ramirez and The Escape from Zafa. It's very like adventure-y with magic. I love like mythology and legends and folklore and all that stuff. So I'm excited about that. And I also actually read a lot of picture books. One of the most recent picture books I actually read was an arc of Gabriela's book, Paola's Fetches. And it was super cute, as someone who really cares about the environment and is very like cognizant of like consumerism. And like I was shopping at thrift stores before it was cool, because we were poor growing up. I really resonated with your book. So thanks for letting me read the arc.
Yay, thanks. I also read your arc. Yeah. Is it okay if I go? Yeah, I also read Plátanos, and it really is a picture book full of love. I'm a picture book writer, and I love the space, and I do read a lot of picture books. And I know we're not right now saying tips and tricks, but I do think that what I do is I read them, and my very, very favorite, I copy them in Word to get used to that, whether it's humor or lyricism or whatever it is that make me, once I write it and I type it out, I can be so much more cognizant on the word choice, which is so important. I recently read Free Water, the Newbery, and was blown away. It was so magical. And I did not, even knowing a little bit about it, I didn't expect how much I was going to learn from it, because it's fiction. But the back matter of the book talks about like how this story is actually grounded in lots of things that happened. And it was fascinating. So yeah, that's well deserved, that award.
Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. And I feel fascinated, because actually you are sprinkling some of the answers that we will probably go over as we answer some of the questions that we've been getting from listeners throughout the podcast. Myself, I'll tell you that I'm taking a break from children's book literature, and I'm reading fiction. Right now, it's really an adult novel, and the title is Miss Del Rio. And I'm reading it because I love to, you know, to go to a public library. And this particular book, written by Barbara Mujica, it's a novel of Dolores del Rio, the first major Latina star in Hollywood. And it's historical, And sometimes historical novels are really fascinating. They really let you into a world that you don't know very much of. And so I'm also reading it because it's a local author. So that's why I'm reading this. And I sometimes do take breaks from children's literature. I love to read, you know, all ages. So, okay, so let's see. I think we are gonna dive into some of these questions that we got here. I think if I were to summarize the questions that we're getting, it's about a little bit about how you get into this field, specifically for, and I don't know how do you read this acronym? BIPOC writers? I don't know how you read that acronym.
Yeah, you got it. BIPOC. I'm not Black, Indigenous, People of Color, BIPOC.
Okay, thank you. My brain is thinking in Spanish. And okay, so I have one question here that I would like you to attack first. What are some do's and don'ts on pitching your book? And pitching your book, then I would say, I would expand on that. Pitching your book to whom? Are you pitching the book? Is there a difference when you're pitching the book to, let's say, an editor directly, or are you pitching to a literary agent? Or are you pitching to your literary agent, so that agent pitches to your editor or to several editors? Okay, responses, let's see. Let's start with Gabriela this time.
Sure, I'd love to start. So let's see, what I actually do is I do love writing pitches, like actually writing it down. And it's a hard thing to do, and it's something that you learn, because it's a different style of writing. So just like you, picture a book is a different style than middle grade than writing an email, right? So I write it down for myself at first. I use my pitch as part of my revision process. When I'm getting ready to revise, I write a pitch for the book, because a pitch is what's the book about and why do we care? Why would anyone care? And I know this probably has happened to a lot of us, where we see a headline in the newspaper that grabs our attention. Then we read the article and it's not what we were promised. So I do that for myself, and then I revise accordingly so that that doesn't happen with my book. And I guess my do's would be that writing a pitch, even for yourself to start with, is great, and it will help you with revision. And do share this with your agent, with critique partners even. And yeah, you use it in your query letter for pitching contests. Now, Twitter pitch contests are such a big thing, right? So we learn how to pitch early, even before the book has been acquired. And in going back to learning how to pitch, I would say a good place to start is book flaps, or wherever books are sold online in the book synopsis. To read those descriptions. And another do, I would say, if you do think that it's a good advice, or you follow my advice of writing it down, mimic the voice of the story. And that's it for me. When I wrote my pitch for Paula's Patches, I did enter a pitching contest on Twitter, and that's how I got my contract. And that pitch that I used is still being used in the synopsis, the book description online. It was used by my agent, and it's still being used in the sales sheet. I saw the sales sheet recently, and it was there. So learning how to pitch, I guess, it's my big do.
So if I'm gonna follow up with one question, the contest that you talked about, is that the hashtag picture book?
Yes.
Do you remember
the The contest was PB Pitch on Twitter. Yeah. That's the one I participated. And I know now since then there's just a lot. And that's a great place to see, even if you're not pitching, to see what works and what doesn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, so let's see, Alisa, you I see you nodding a lot, and I would love to know, why are you nodding so much?
Yeah, I'm nodding because I also had some success with the Twitter pitch competitions. After I had finished a couple of my manuscripts and a couple of my critique groups were like, oh, like, are you going to do it? And I was like, I know I'm not ready. I was like, no, absolutely not. But then I definitely felt FOMO. Like, I was like, definitely the fear of missing out, and they were all in it. And they were like, I think your story's ready. And I didn't think so, you know, we're all, like, at least for me, I'm always my toughest critic. So, no pensaba que estaba lista, but I'm glad that they like pushed me, that they were like, no, let's do it. Let's do it. And then we all did it together. Cause then we were like boosting each other's, and it was like a little party. Like, it was lots of fun. And, a lot of anxiety too, you know, but mostly fun than anything else. I think I did like Pit Mad, but it was like 4 years ago. So like there's a lot out there now. So participate in all of them. And it worked out really well for me because I got a lot of interest from editors and agents. So it was a good opportunity to leverage those likes and retweets from both editors and agents when I went really like into the submission, like, well, the query process to acquire my agent. So I know Twitter's a trash fire right now for a lot of like other reasons, but I do still think the literary community is still very plugged into it. So I do recommend the competitions, like Gabby says. I actually hate pitching though, which is why the competition was so good, because it just like forced you to just rip off the band-aid with like the really limited word count, well, character count that Twitter has. I hate pitching because the way that I write, I often discover like what I'm writing about as I'm writing it. So like I'll start off with a pitch-ish, but really I start off with an idea. And then I write it, and then I hate it, and then I write it again. And, you know, like, I really discover my writing through the revision process. So it's hard to write a pitch from the get-go for me, because that's just not my flow. So, Gabby, I'm trying to be like you, where, like, it's, like, clear. You write this pitch, and then you use your pitch to revise. Para mí es totalmente diferente. Like, I'll start off with, like, when I write, I start off with, like, a feeling, or like a moment or a memory or like something very vague. And then I revise it to turn it into like a finished product. And then I'm like, oh, now I have to summarize my whole book in like one sentence as a pitch. Oh my God, like I'm gonna jump off a window. But no, not really. Don't do that. But I did read a lot of articles about pitching because I suck at it, right? And it's so important. You have to be good at it because you can't get an agent without a good pitch. You can't get an editor's buy-in without the pitch. Even if like the editor likes it, the editor then has to like pitch it to their acquisition team so that they can buy the book. Like it's just pitching every step of the way. So there was one article that I read, and I'll share it, and I keep this in like my notes, because it was such a good, like, quick and dirty log line, like pitch line, you know, those words are often used interchangeably. So I'll read it twice for, like, the listeners, para que lo escriban, okay? Like, so this changed my life. So when the inciting incident happens, the protagonist must achieve the objective or risk the stakes. I'll say it one more time. When the inciting incident happens, the protagonist must achieve the objective or risk the stakes. So obviously, like, you know, where I say the inciting incident, you insert what your inciting incident is and like what the stakes are and all that fun stuff. But it's really helpful, especially like for plot-driven stories. For non like plot-driven stories, no tengo, like, I don't have advice for you. I'm sorry. And it's funny because a lot of my, like my first book, Platanos Are Love, is not really a plot-driven story. So my agent actually helped me write my pitch for it because yo estaba like literally perdida, like it was so bad. But shout out to my wonderful agent, Caitlin. But it worked because I actually, she became my agent for a different manuscript. So I was able to write a successful pitch once for a different manuscript called Gloriana Presente, which is actually my third book that's coming out next year. So long story short, definitely learn how to do it badly, do it, and then eventually do it better, and have like other people read your log line, like have other people read your pitch to give you feedback, just like they do for your manuscript.
So if I'm understanding this, I mean, both of your approaches, I think that Gabriela, you first wrote the pitch and then you developed to kind of match the pitch that you were, that you had come up with. Is that my correct understanding, Gabriela?
I usually write first the actual story and revise a bit, but then at some point during the revision process, I do write the pitch and then revise after that, just to really clarify, just to make sure that how you say in picture books that like every word is serving the book or the purpose or the things are coming out clearly. So I do it in part of my revision process, but at first I do just start writing. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, because I gather that Alisa's process was very, very organic and very messy. And, you know, but if all that, you end up with a wonderful product, it doesn't matter how, it's about achieving the product. Okay, but I want to hear now from Sally-Ann, how is it that you go about pitching your middle grade books to whether an editor or your agent?
Sure, so I love what Gabriela and Alisa shared because it got very technical with some of the pitching and you know, I also did my share of pitch contests on Twitter and whatnot, and I had a lot of fun with it because it's not really just about pitching your book, it's about building community and you meet a lot of people and it's fun and you lift each other up. So you can definitely have a lot of fun about with those pitch events. But and shout out one of my favorites, which I think started 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, is Latinx pitch. So for us Latinos, it's perfect because it's kid-lit, it's Latino, and it's wonderful. And the great thing that I love about this contest is that it's also for agented authors. So you can pitch without an agent or with an agent, and then the editors can also kind of like and boost and whatnot. So it covers both aspects. But I also want to step back since we touched upon a lot of the technical stuff. I really want to step back. I really want to touch upon some of the emotional stuff. I think for me, it's really important to keep three things in mind. And I call it the three P's: be polite, be professional, and be patient, because you're going to get so many no's throughout this process with the pitches and the back and forth with the agents, the editors. And really, you just have to kind of go with the flow and don't take it personally. You're going to get, again, you're going to get so many no's. So really don't take it personally. It's a business. They're in the business to sell books and make money. And some people are going to connect with it. Some people are not. So really just, you know, put on your big girl panties and roll with it, because it's a difficult process. So keep at it. The world needs our stories. Don't give up, keep going. Pero it's, you know, it's a rocky road ahead.
And if I could add to that, like the other thing to keep in mind when you're pitching is that there are like 101 reasons why your manuscript might not be picked. That literally has nothing to do with your manuscript. It might be that the editor you're pitching to, like they only have a certain amount of books that they can publish. And a lot of in contracts, they get like dibs on the next work. So like, let's say an editor acquires a book in 2020 and they can only acquire 12 books that year. The following year, some of those like next 12 slots are kind of like on hold for the next work of the author that they were working with. So there's like, sometimes it's not even a matter of your book. It's just, they don't have enough slots for your work. So don't take it personal. Just adding to what you said, because it's hard out there.
And it's, and so, you know, go to the market, or it could be like, listen, we already have our Cuban American author that wrote a refugee story last year. We can't. So it's really there's so many factors that come into play.
Definitely.
And there's also something else. And that is that even if the book is fantastic, you know, it's the right subject at the right time. You know, let's say that you came up with a book about grief. Well, you know what? The editor that it was submitted to, she doesn't want to go there at all. So it may not be a subject matter that actually is loved by the editor that your agent is pitching to, or even your agent. I mean, you're going through the first barrier is the agent. So usually right now in the publishing market of today, many new authors or pre-published authors need to find a literary agent in order to get into the field. That is today. I mean, I've been hearing this field for the past 4 decades, and I've seen it change tremendously. I will say, though, to all of you, that what the field has now to offer in terms of books for, you know, that represent people of BIPOC, people of color, and Latinx writers and creators, it's by far much. I mean, it's a vast world of difference from when I started in the 80s. So it is fantastic. That specific fact that we have a lot more makes it even harder that you are doing the right pitch for the right book at the right time for the right agent that will submit it to the right editor. So it's really a lot of barriers, and that is why patience, the P's that were mentioned here, are very important.
Lulu, to your point, I love to call it the intersection of preparation and magic, because I think you do need that dose of magic. Like you said, you have to be at the right place at the right time, and you need that little sprinkling of magic when it all lines up together and you get that yes. So
absolutely. My mentor, I was super lucky to work with Donna Barba Higuera, and she said, you know, this is like, it's 90% preparation and then 10% luck. And like, depending upon who you ask, they might say it's 80% preparation and 20% luck. And they might change the proportions. But just be prepared, do the work, you know, and have patience, because luck does have to do with it.
I'm going to add one more P, persistence. Persistence is the key to your dreams.
Absolutely.
So keep at it. You know, when I started 42 years ago, there were no books for my own daughters. But here you go now to the library and your books are there. So, you know, just keep at it. Okay, so let's see. We touched on pitching books. I mean, do's and don'ts are pitching picture books. This is an interesting question. If we're going to differentiate between pitching books per se and pitching picture books, I'm going to start here by saying this. As an author illustrator, I have been asked by authors to, you know, come up with illustration for their books before pitching it. And I always say no. Why? Because if you are not, I mean, I will illustrate for books that have already been contracted, but I will not illustrate on for a book that has not been contracted. Why? Because it's usually the prerogative of the editor to pair the author, the manuscript, with the right illustrator. Not every illustrator is right for every manuscript. So that is why that would be a don't. Don't try to find your an illustrator for your book if you're a writer, or if you are an illustrator and want to try at writing the story, you know, yourself, yes, go for it. But if you are not an artist, I would just go pitch your manuscript, picture book manuscript, without thinking about the illustration. The right illustrator will appear once you sell that book And it's usually the editor who knows and has seen, you know, a lot of different illustrators that will be able to match, to find that most accurate and good match for your specific work. So that would be my do's and don'ts about pitching picture books. Anybody wants to, you know, add to that?
No, I think it's pretty similar the way that you pitch, like the way that your log line looks, the way that your pitch looks, depending upon what genre it is, it all looks pretty similar. You know, a query letter is the same. It needs to be one page, whether you're writing a picture book or whether you're writing an adult manuscript. And your pitch should really be like one sentence. The other thing that maybe you can include in like a secondary sentence and like that query letter when you're trying to get an agent is like your word count, and maybe add some comps in there. So that was really hard for us when there weren't stories that resonated, that weren't similar to ours. But fortunately, the industry is changing slowly. There's still a lot more room. There's still a lot more work to do, but it has been easier to pitch because there are, but when I was looking for comp titles for my books, I was actually able to come up with BIPOC authors that had similar works that were award-winning books, you know. But in terms of like the structure and the way that the pitch looks, it's fairly similar.
And since you, I think we touched a little bit about literary agents, could you all share about how is it that you got to your agent? Because I, like I said in the beginning, you know, way back 40 decades ago, you could literally walk into a publishing house and meet an editor and show your work. That's not happening anymore, as far as I know. Correct me if I'm wrong. But so if we now are pitching to literary agents, how is that you do it nowadays? Who'd like to jump in on this one here?
There are Alisa? Few publishing houses that do take unagented, unsolicited manuscripts, but they are few and far between, and you end up in like the slush pile. So like, even though they accept it, they really only review like the slush pile like once a week, maybe even once a month. Some of those off the top of my head is like Chronicle, Living Querido, Coquila. They take unsolicited, unagented manuscripts, but I still highly recommend getting an agent, because the other function of an agent is that they help you to get the best deal for your book. So even if you are able to get out of that slush pile and you get the attention of an editor, felicidades, congratulations. But then comes the other part of it where it's like, now you have a deal. And these contracts are thick, y'all. Like, these contracts are pages upon pages. And unless you have a legal degree, it's really hard to, like, know what a good deal looks like. And for me, like, I'm so glad that I have my agent. Caitlin is amazing. We are both, like, firecracker Aries, like, and she gets me. We just get each other, you know, like your relationship with your agent is like a marriage. We just get each other. She gets me. And she was one of the agents that I queried after the pitch mad. And she actually was going to just give me an R&R, a revise and resubmit. And I was totally like down. I was game. I was like, yeah, this is a good exercise in editing. And then after like getting to know each other and hearing her feedback, and like we were just like riffing off each other, like literally talked for like an hour and a half. And then at that like hour and a half mark, she's like, no, never mind. You know what? I'm going to offer you representation, like welcome aboard. And I was like, what? Like it was so cool. Like I love telling that story because it just was. It's the perfect analogy for writing. Like it's just so unexpected, and you just don't know what like, and it's literally how I've felt every step of the journey, right? Like So,
and it stresses the importance of making that connection with the one person that understands you, and that works both for the literary agent as well as for the editor. So absolutely. We go back to not all pitches are going to be perfect to all editors at all publishing houses. That doesn't work. And I want to add one more thing about the list that you made of different publishing houses that will accept unsolicited. I will say that Leon Low Books has a wonderful contest, and Leon Low is a medium-sized publisher that publishes underrepresented people and people of color. And they have the New Voices Award contest, and the award is literally your publishing contract. So they don't have a slush pile. They really have a dedicated pile when the contest has come around. It's really not, you are not into the slush, you are into the pile that might become the next, your publishing contract. So that's one that is a good one for those who are not out there that are not finding a literary agent right away. You can still try this way. Okay, so we haven't heard from Sonia.
I'm sorry to interject one more time. Scholastic also does a contest. As you were talking about the Leon Low, it reminded me, Scholastic does a contest. I don't know if they host it at the same time every year, but it's very similar, where they open it up during a specific time, specifically for underrepresented authors, and you're not put in the slush pile.
All right. So for me, in terms of how I obtain my agent, I'm involved in, I know a lot of kidlit authors, of course, are involved in SCBWI, the Society of Children Book Writers and Illustrators. So I've been attending the local conference, and I'm in a local critique group. So it's great networking, because your critique partners always kind of give you a heads up on little tips and whatnot. But also the conference for me is actually how I ended up getting my agent, because I went to a conference where I'm based in Miami, and my agent was on the panel. I think it was a panel of maybe four or five agents. And I just really liked his energy, because everybody was getting very specific. Like, I want a book with like a female soccer star that's like, and he was just like, you know, I just want to fall in love. I want to get the magic. And so I queried him, because at these conferences, they give you a sheet with all of the agents and editors that are present, with an invitation to query them. And then the wonderful thing is that it's a warm query. So I was able to send him a query. Hey, you know, I saw you speak at this conference, blah, blah, blah. And I saw that you like XYZ. So here, if you would look at my review, my pitch and whatnot. So yes, I think that really worked for me. And then he immediately wrote back, oh, yes, I remember meeting you. And so it's really nice when you get that kind of warm introduction, because they're going to get so many queries. I mean, I hear of agents getting like thousands of queries. So if there's one little thing that you can do to have your query letter stand up, like kind of that warm introduction, I think that really goes a long way. So that's just my story.
Well, it's interesting. We do have a question here from the audience, and which is, what is the best advice for unpublished BIPOC writers? But also, I don't know if there's another question that is sort of like, I will say it's they are piggybacking of each other. What are some resources? Because advice and resources are similar. What are some resources that you can share with unpublished BIPOC writers? And I would like to extend not only to writers, but to writers and creators, because some of us out there are artists as well. So I would like to extend that to let's talk about resources that we can share that will be helpful for any authors and illustrators out there that want to get into the children's book publishing and that are Latinx or BIPOC. And we already mentioned, Salien, the SCBWI, Society of Children's Books Writers and Illustrators, which is a nationwide organization that goes back to decades ago, and it has chapters all around in the States. And if you are, I don't remember the, no, you can, I think that, yes, you can become a member without being published. Is that correct, Salien?
Yes, for sure. And the conferences, when you do attend the conference, I would say probably 80% of the people are not published, because a lot of the seminars and the presentations are really resources to give you the tools to get your agent or get published. So absolutely, it's got a whole educational component, which is key.
So the beauty of it is that you can attend conferences in whatever state you are, because you don't have to travel unless you want to go to the national conference. But they have different conferences throughout the states. As an unpublished writer, you can go to those conferences. But also there's another component that I really like now, and this is the component that came about, this one of the silver linings of the pandemic, is all the virtual components that came about after the pandemic and that are still going strong. And I know that as a member, you can, let's say that, you know, there's a wonderful thing that it's going on and you cannot watch it right now, and you can watch it later if you are a member of the SCBWI. And I would like to say that the same way, there's another association, which is not children's book publishing, but it's a very good association as well, is the Authors Guild. And the Authors Guild, if you're a member, and I want to say that I can't recall right now if at the Authors Guild, and it's authorsguild.org, I think, right? I think. You can Google it, you'll find it. But I want to say that the authors, I do know that the Authors Guild also has, as a member, you also have availability to register to an immense amount of webinars. And some of them, going back to what Alisa said, some of them really are extremely helpful at understanding contracts, because that's something that the Authors Guild, they do very well. So I'm gonna step down from the soapbox and let's see who wants to jump in and to with some other resources that we can share. Gabriela?
Yeah, I can jump in. I think it's really important about what you mentioned, what was mentioned before about connections with finding literary agents, but also every step of the way. I was in the query trenches for a while, and I think I got 34 rejections before finding my agent. And it was through a 15-minute meet an agent with an organization called Philadelphia Stories. And it was a very similar story where I pitched her Paula's Patches in like a minute and a half, and the rest we just connected. We talked, we spoke about raising bilingual kids. She's Cuban American. And we just really saw eye to eye on so many things at so many different levels that's when she was like, send me your stories. But also another resource, the way it happened, and I'm talking about the literary agent, but it's also connected to resources, because I think it's the same theme of finding community in all steps of the way. And I had this other manuscript called Squawk of Spanish, which is actually my second book coming out in 2024. And Charles Bridge Publishing also has a program called Connections, and you can Google it, Charles Bridge Connections. And it's an opportunity for BIPOC authors to submit their manuscripts, and you get matched with an editor for a 30-minute discussion of your book. And I'm not sure if it leads to contracts or not. I participated, I got matched. And at the end, the editor said, submit your story. But she gave me her email address, so it gets you out of that slush pile. And so that's a really good resource to have as well. And and it helped me. Actually, I signed my agent once I got this Charles Bridge was interested, and I did the pitching for Paula's Patches, and I was able to nudge my agent with this, and that's how I got the call and everything else. But yes, I think creating community is whatever resource helps you with that. And you mentioned a lot that we're in this online virtual age, so social media is a good place to find things, including critique groups. A lot of them are local, but sometimes you can do critique groups via Zoom. I think mentorships are wonderful. I know Las Musas has the Hermanas mentorship. I actually submitted and did not get chosen for the Hermanas, but I've never been mentored. I consider my agent and my critique partners my mentors, but I think those are wonderful opportunities. If any of you could talk about that, because SCBWI local, critique groups, and mentorships. I say whatever it is that you can find a good, strong community is what's wonderful out there in terms of resources.
I'm glad you mentioned Las Musas, because it's not only Las Musas that has a mentorship program. I have mentored twice through Las Musas and twice through Latinx Kid Lit. I'm sorry, through Latinx in Literature, which is from the publishing industry. So Latinx in children's book publishing, they also have mentorship program. And you can apply that would be for Latinx writers and creatives, but you can apply, and it's not, I don't know, there is a process. And there's also another association that has mentorships, and that is that We Need Diverse Books. So there you have three opportunities for mentorships for people that would like to get into that comfort zone of having community, as Gabriela mentioned. Community comes from, you know, talking to other people. Like we talked about, you know, the fact it can be through SWI, it can be through the Twitter, and you just have this bubble in which you don't get to be friends with people that are not nice, but you get to be friends with people that are in love with of children's literature, like you are. And you can create community still now. I think Twitter it's still useful for many things, especially for some, you know, things that are going very fast. But you know, there are different platforms, and the virtual platform, it's very valid right now. So I don't know whether Sally Ann and Alisa has anything. Oh, Alisa has something else to add. Yes.
I did actually write a blog post that has like a list of over 30 different mentorship opportunities. I was a Las Musas mentee, and then I was also a mentee through The Words, a storytelling sanctuary program. And they're, at least to my knowledge, the only mentorship program that pairs you up with an editor. So Las Musas pairs you up with an author. There's others like PB Book Chat, PB Rising Stars. SCBWI also offers a mentorship program. Their like Nevada program is specifically for middle grade and YA. You have Diverse Voices, Avengers of Color. Like I have like a whole list on my website that you guys can check out. But of all of those programs, most of them pair you with another author that's been in the industry, that has published books, that can like really peel back the curtain, because there is a lot of like mystery when it comes to publishing. But the Words mentorship program pairs you up with an editor, and that's actually how I got one of my editors. So my first book that I mentioned, Platanos Are Love, I went through like the quote-unquote traditional process, in which I got an agent first and then we went on submission. But two of my books that are coming out, The Bronx Is My Home, that comes out this October, and then Gloriana Presente, A First Day of School book, that comes out next year, were actually acquired through that mentorship program. I worked with the editor. We just hit it off. Again, going back to what Gabby said about connection being super important, we just jived. Like, Jessica's amazing. I love you. And then she acquired two of my books. So definitely strongly encourage mentorship programs. And I was actually selected for PB mentorship, but then I had to withdraw because I got an agent and I wanted to open up that opportunity for someone else. So strongly encourage mentorship programs. I have a list on my website, so definitely have fun with that.
I also believe that the Latinx in publishing and Las Musas and even the resources that you can now find through the videotaped programs that the Latinx Book Festival has done are all very helpful. So let's see. I don't remember. Did I miss, Gabriela, did I miss how is it that you met your agent? I'm not quite sure because I was writing. Did I miss that? Did you tell that story?
But I kind of said it a little bit in the resources. But yeah, I guess I can jump in. I mentioned I queried, got rejections, and then I met my agent through this one-on-one. So, yep.
So it can happen one-on-one. It can happen, you know, through
conferences. I think you have to get it
like SWI.
Because this one-on-one, we got along really well, and she invited me to submit. But at the same time, it was through the PB pitch that I got a like from Paul, with Paula's Patches, and this other connections program with Charles Bridge that I got invited to submit with this other manuscript, Squawk of Spanish, was how I was able to nudge my agent, because I was invited to submit my work and I was waiting, right? I was waiting on to see what happened. And then when Free Spirit, which is my publisher, said, we want to take this into acquisitions, I was able to use that to nudge my agent. And that's how I got the call. So to your point, you have to sometimes, as an unpublished author, you just have to take from all difference, do the querying tradition.
It's a wide net.
Just all the opportunities. All the opportunity.
Just cast a wide net, right?
Exactly.
A ver qué pescas.
Exactly.
Okay, so let me see. How can we end on a positive note to entice those unpublished authors to dive in, cast their wide nets, and try, be persistent as the, podríamos decir, sí se puede.
I think it's so important, right? I mean, we really just got to keep our eye on the goal and know that our stories need to be out there. We need our voices out there. We need these stories for our children. We need to empower our youth. And it's so important. Así que, you know, eye on the goal. Y como tú dices, sí se puede. Pa'lante.
Sí se puede. Pa'lante. Sí, pa'lante. Como dicen los boricua, pa'lante. Con un poquito de plátano y un cafecito.
Love that. Yes, siempre un poco de bizcocho con plátanos y cafecito. Always.
Bueno, pues yo creo que entonces I think that we're going to wrap up this podcast today, unless anybody has a few more words to share with our audience.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you, gracias.
Una cosita más antes de que se nos vayan cada una. Díganme cuál es el libro, lo han mencionado por encima. I'm sorry, I switched to Spanish. You just told very briefly an upcoming book that has not been published within the next for you. Which upcoming book is for you coming soon that has not been published and you have not mentioned as the latest book in this podcast? Okay, Salian, even whether it has not been published, but it's in the works and you know that it's going to be published.
Well, I'm actually working on a book right now that's set in Puerto Rico, huepa. So I'm very excited about this one. But that's all I can share.
Alisa?
That's awesome. I'm excited about that. So for me, I have Platanos Are Love, which comes out April 11th. And then my next book is called The Bronx Is My Home, which comes out in October. And then after that, it's Gloriana Presente, a first day of school book that comes out in next year. So they're all very different, but they all, like, at their core are about love. So Platanos Are Love is about family and love. The Bronx Is My Home is a love letter to the Bronx. And Gloriana Presente is a love letter to any kid who is learning to find their voice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Chévere. Felicidades. Gabriela?
Yeah, I have two picture books coming out. First one is July 11th, Paula's Patches. And that is with Free Spirit Publishing and illustrated by Rocío Arreola. My second picture book is with Charles Bridge. It's called Squawk of Spanish. And it's going to come out in English. It has a little bit of Spanish, but an English edition and a bilingual edition. So I'm really excited about that. That's coming out in 2024, illustrated by Romina Galota. And then I am on sub as of Tuesday with three stories. So knocking wood in those. Yeah.
Right now, knocking on wood. So I will finish up by saying that I do have another picture book coming out in September, and the title is Veo Veo, I See You, based on the game Veo Veo Que Ves. And it is a celebration of essential workers. So because we do see them.
Very needed.
We do see them. So look for that one. It's coming out of Athenaeum, Simon & Schuster. Bueno, y con esto, sí, ya.
Se acabó el cuento.
Y se acabó el cuento. Hasta la próxima. Colorín colorado, este cuento se ha acabado.
Me encanta.
If you'd like to learn more about Las Musas or our books, please, please visit our website at lasmusasbook.com or find us on social media at Las Musas Books. And be sure to check out our bookshop page, where each purchase of one of our books goes towards supporting independent bookstores. Isn't that amazing? If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. You can also sign up for Las Musas newsletter to have podcast updates as well as other Musas news, and to learn of release dates, teasers, spotlights, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Thanks for listening. Muchas gracias, gente. Esperamos que escuchen el próximo. We hope you listen to the next one.
Ciao. Gracias.